Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women of Wisdom, everyone. And I just got condemned all in my head while talking to Shannon. And I didn't realize that she has not only authored one book, which is 20 Beautiful Women, she has authored two books. Pardon me, because I got jumbled all in my head and I'm going 1,000 miles a minute. That being said, we are redoing Women of Wisdom as we speak, and so I'm working on that. I'm working on surprises. Also, my book comes out on my, what book are we on now? Fourth book, I think now. My first book comes out on next Monday, which is June 22nd. That also happens to be my birthday, and to you guys is that book. Well, enough about me, enough about Women of Wisdom. Let's bring the fabulous Shannon on. Hang on, and I'll bring you on. Shannon, welcome to Women of Wisdom. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing good, and how are you?
Good. And it's a pleasure and honor to be working with you. I know we connected to 20 Beautiful Women, but before we get to all that, let's talk about the Chronicles of Pain. And let's talk about your journey way back when, the beginning of your journey as a writer. And my first question is, why? Why did you use writing as therapy, and why did you start writing books?
Okay, interesting question. The reason why I started writing, first of all, I have to say that I wasn't thinking about writing a book when I started writing. I started to journal my pain. I did it as therapy, a way to get through all of the emotions as I was starting my recovery process from drugs and alcohol. And so I had no idea that it was going to turn into a book at the time I started writing, which was in 2010. Then I started writing.
Oh, my God.
So I just compiled all my journals together.
You did a writing assignment, I presume, for someone else, and you just decided to write a book.
Yeah, I feel like God led me into writing this book. I compiled all my journals together. I sat down one day, and plus the work that I was doing at the shelter, I was a case manager, and all the women that came in there were pretty broken, and a lot of them had my same story, only they didn't know that they had my story, and they used to always tell me, oh, you don't know what I've been through, you don't know what I've been through. And I was like, you know, quite contrary. Here, let me sit down and tell you about it. And they, you know, they were amazed, and it got me to connect with them and got me to help them, you know, because they believed in me because they knew I had walked their walk. And so that's the second part of the motivation for writing.
Oh, my God. So you were helping with all this, and it is the second motivation for the writing, and it's the second motivation for the writing, and it's the second motivation to help you gather your strength to now tell a bunch of strangers in 20 Beautiful Women on your story. And how
Correct.
Has that changed your life?
Wow, it's been amazing. It's been tough. The transparency piece of writing about, you know, my pain has been tough, but is overwhelmingly, I mean, I'm overwhelmed with gratitude because I'm able to, I have the courage to share this, my story with the world and share my story with other people, because so many women come to me and be like, oh my God, I could never say that, or I thought I was alone, or how did you, you know, get the courage? And, you know, it opens up the avenue and a door, you know, where we can dialogue and have conversation about how I got to where I got to, and, you know, how I'm doing now, and to give hope. You know, that's what it's really all about, is giving hope to someone else who, because I remember having no hope, you know, at one time when I was, you know, on drugs and alcohol. But this is an avenue to give hope to other women.
Oh, my God. So how long were you on the icky stuff being drugs and alcohol? Thank you very much. I mean, how long were you addicted?
About 22 years.
Oh, my. Lovely. Yeah. Lovely.
I have five years in September.
Well, congratulations on that. I know it's a dangerous, dangerous path to get on and to get off. Jeez. It's a tough one right there, and it's like, how are we going to do this? So what would be your advice to people that are now stuck in your same position that you were in, not sober and clean, of course, but what would you say to people that are now stuck in your position, and how do you want to help them through reading your book and through 20 Beautiful Women?
The story of Chronicles of Pain, I mean, I want people to know that don't give up. I don't care how many times you fall down. I don't care how many times they say you can't make it. You can make it. And it just doesn't matter. You just have to get back up again. And the story through 20 Beautiful Women, I focus mainly on my childhood. And from that story, what I want most people to grasp is that we have got to be careful what we teach and allow our children to experience in life. I mean, it shapes their whole world. So, you know, as parents, we have a responsibility, you know, as a community, we have a responsibility. So,
yes,
that's the main message I would get from both books that
and
I'd
so,
love to get out.
So, basically, it's monkey see, monkey do. If child sees mommy doing drugs and alcohol, they're automatically going to see not let alone do drugs and alcohol. I mean, children are very impressionable, you guys. You know, my background is in education, and those of you that know me well enough know I'm a big advocate for the special ed population. And so children so vulnerable, they are like sponges. They take everything in. And so basically, how, if there's a kid involved, Shannon, how would you say to that parent, you need to stop?
How would I say to them that they need to stop?
How would, yes, exactly.
To stop using?
To stop using.
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, they have to recognize that they have a problem. And if they don't recognize that they have a problem, then we can't really get anywhere.
Well, the quick without a paddle.
Yeah.
Well, the quick without a paddle. If they can't,
right.
If they can't help, well, the quick without a paddle. I'm sorry, but if a person can't face their own addictions and their own demons, well, the quick without a paddle. The bullet stops here. I mean, there's only so much help you can give. But to those who want to face their own addictions, what do you say?
Well, I would say that, you know, you have to come to the place where you know that you have a problem. And here's the thing, most people that have an addiction are coming from a place of pain. That's why the book chronicles the pain, even the pain is left behind. My addiction was stemmed from pain of abuse from childhood. My father was an alcoholic, but you have to recognize, you got to hold that mirror up in your face and say, hey, this is ugly, this is me, and I need to change. And until a person is willing to do that, there is nothing that anyone else can do. We can suggest, we can drop hints, we can, you know, crowd around them and try to give them support, but they are ultimately the only person that's going to foster the initial change.
They are ultimately the only person. And do you now have support that you need to keep yourself clean and sober? Or is it day-by-day basis?
Oh, yeah, it's always going to be day-by-day. I mean, that's just a part of an ex-addict's life. You know, I have a couple support groups that I run for women. Then that keeps me stable as well. My desire to never return to drugs and alcohol is my ultimate inspiration. With God's help, I wouldn't be able to do this at all without him. But, I run a couple programs. I go to a lot of motivational meetings. I go to church. You got to get involved with someone in some kind of program that is going to help you gain the tools to continue to use. You can't do it by yourself. Anyone that tries, you know, that's a scary situation. We need help and we need support. So support groups are, I would say, mandatory.
Yes. And explain to my listeners what support groups you run, you host yourself.
I host support groups called Friday Night Talks. They're out of Camp Washington. One is out of Camp Washington. And then I also will begin to host another Friday Night Talks out of the Nativity Shelter in Tacoma, Washington. And that will be for the homeless population there. And when I say support groups, I mean from emotional support, addiction support, recovery support. I mean, pretty much what you got, let's bring it to the table. Let's figure out how we can help you, how we can get the help you need. And so those have been, Friday Night Talks and Kitten have been very successful. And it helped me as well.
Congratulations on that. And what has been your most favorite success story based out of all of this?
As far as me and another person, or are you talking
about? As far as the groups you run, as far as you, as far
Okay. I would have to say there is this young lady who's been coming since February, and she just refused to speak to us at all. She didn't want to be there, you know, just nothing. And so the third month in, she actually opened up and says, I've been listening, you know, I've been hearing you, and, you know, it's good to hear from someone who's walked the walk, and you can see them, you know, you can see the change, someone who comes from my background. I think that's really important for people to see someone who's been where they are and has gone from that point to another point, which is, you know, being successful in their recovery. And I know that personally for myself as well. I was always looking for someone to look up to, and it was really hard for me to find someone who had been where I was at and then come out of that. So she would be my success story, because now she wants, at first she didn't want to read the book, she didn't want to do any work, and now she's like, yeah, I'm ready. So that right there in itself just amazing.
You have to... it's like a cocoon. It's like a butterfly in a cocoon. You kind of have to sit back and let them come. Let them come out to you. And you can't force these people. You can't necessarily force these people. You can't necessarily say, hey, I have an idea for you, you do this. No, it's scary. It's definitely scary, and it's definitely scary, and it's definitely something that scary, and it's definitely something you kind of need to be a mother hen to, which I know you have learned over the years to be a mother hen to these people, and it is definitely scary, and it's definitely frightening to these people when they say, I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. And when they say, I don't feel like doing this, and I don't feel like comfortable with you guys. Have you ever had someone run the other direction immediately when they walk in the door?
Well, kind of. She just was really hesitant. And then I went and talked to her. She wound up leaving, but that's okay. You know, I think that as long as we can plant some sort of seed, you know, one plants, one waters, we're not responsible for the outcomes of everyone's life. We're just responsible to do our part, you know.
Yes.
So you have to know when to push, when not to. You have to be very sensitive, because some people aren't ready. Some people are ready. You got to know when to pull the peak a little bit for the people who are ready. But you know, you got to be able to gauge that. You know, and you know, schooling helps. So life experience plus school, it all helps.
Life experience plus school. I am interested in hearing you say that. Life experience plus school helps educate yourself, educate on what you're trying to do, and educate yourself on everything. I mean, we're all lifelong learners here. Drug, alcohol, educate yourself, and don't automatically judge a book by its cover. If a homeless guy comes up, I have my feelings, and I deal with the homeless, I deal with the disabled, I deal with the police, I deal with every which way, you name it, I practically deal with it. And so when a homeless person comes up to a individual, all you can do is listen to them. Do not give them money, because that can go towards their addiction. The money that we hand to the addicted person, they'll go automatically spend it on their addiction. When do you agree?
Well, I would agree that if you are handing money to an addicted individual, that they're probably going to use that for drugs, yes. I believe that there's a lot of ways that we can help the homeless out. And that's why purchasing things for them, purchasing tools, buying cars, you know, purchasing hotel rooms, however your finances leave you, you know, I would say go and purchase those things if you really want to be on the safe side, because you don't know if that person comes from drugs or alcohol. You don't know if that person used to be a billionaire. We have no clue. So you can't say every homeless person is or has been on drugs to any extent. They could have had a mental illness. We just never know. So I think to be on the safe side, I would say let's purchase something for them, whatever that they need.
Yeah, I agree with you. Let's purchase something, not hand them the money and let them go off on their own, because you never know where that money will land up. You never know where that money will land up, and I'm sorry to say that, but that's my advice, will always be my advice. advice, and I read in your bio, Shannon, that you are a domestic abuse survivor, and the last person I talked to, who was also in 20 Beautiful Women,
Yeah.
Makia, she
Yep.
is also a domestic abuse survivor, and congratulations on getting out of that situation right there. And talk to us a little bit about the drugs and alcohol and the domestic abuse. Did being in that relationship, how do I put this nicely, make the other problem difficult? I presume it made it 10 times more difficult.
And the other problem as in drugs and alcohol?
Yes, the other problem as in drugs and
Oh
alcohol.
yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. And reason being is because I was trying to pretend like it wasn't so bad, and the drugs helped me believe that, you know, because drugs and alcohol numb things. You don't have to feel. So it's not as bad, you know, getting locked in your closet. It's not as bad, you know, at least he's not, you know, stabbing me or, you know, beating me with a belt. But the verbal abuse and the being held hostage is, you know, sexual abuse is horrible. But when you're constantly numbing yourself so you don't feel that, you know, you don't feel it. It is what it is, you know. So yeah, the drugs and alcohol played a huge role in that.
So basically, you were not beaten per se, but you were verbally abused.
I was verbally abused. I was sexually abused. The threat of being hit was enough for me because of what I had been through with my stepfather. So I was not going to allow that to happen. So whatever I needed to do to get out of being hit is what I did. So I had the threat, the constant threat, never the actual punch in the face from, you know, from him. Or, I mean, I was kidnapped. I was, all these horrible things were done to me. But him actually punching me or hitting me, socking me or anything like that, no. But everything else was 10 times worse. So,
Wow.
yeah.
Wow. Oy.
And
Wow.
how do you
That
compare
sounds.
that? You really can't compare not being physically hit with the verbal abuse or the sexual assault by that same individual. So, do you see the irony in that?
Yes,
Yeah.
because just as my disability affects everyone different, emotional abuse, physical abuse, abuse in general affects everyone different, all depending on what the abuser wants to do. And it's so interesting because I myself was emotionally abused, not by my own family to say, but in the workplace. In the workplace. And that was not so pretty. I mean, it's like she started my abuser, if you would call her that. She started laughing when I said, I want a paycheck. She started laughing at me, and it's like it went all down south from there. So mental abuse in the workplace could happen to anyone, including myself, and it scored me, for it made a huge impact because here I thought I was doing a service to help her with kids, but no. I landed up leaving that job and leaving that job behind. But as I said, abuse and physical disabilities can affect everyone. And I appreciate you being on Women of Wisdom and sharing your story. And I appreciate you giving hope to all survivors out there, Shannon. And I definitely want to keep in touch within the 20 Beautiful Women. As we said, 20 Beautiful Women and the Chronicles of Pain is a book that Shannon and I are talking about today. And I presume that both books could be found on Amazon. I know 20 Beautiful Women can. I'm not quite sure about the Chronicles of Pain.
Yes, it's available on Kindle as well as paperback.
So it's available
as well as on my own website as well.
I hope that people go out and get it and read your story and also read 20 Beautiful Women. And I know that 20 Beautiful Women is accepting entries. I know they're on fourth version of 20 Beautiful Women, and that's based out of, that's run compilated by Sabatakis, who's based out of Los Angeles. When I did, she was in Seattle, and she's a phenomenal person to work with. So for those of you who are interested in being in an anthology, please go find her on Facebook. Go find Colleen Hall. I am also doing my own anthology, and in the next couple of weeks, and we'll start posting that on Facebook. And so, if you're interested in anthologies, please let Colleen Hall, myself, or Saba know, and we'll get you hooked up to be author in the compilated book. And this journey has been incredible. And I appreciate Shannon sharing this journey with me and the 20 Beautiful Women journey.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you guys, I just want to thank you for all tuning in to another fabulous episode. We had Shannon, and she spoke about overcoming all this stuff, and then she also spoke about 20 Beautiful Women and Chronicles of Pain. Again, we had the fabulous wisdom of Shannon Blake, and I hope you guys tune in tomorrow for another fabulous episode, and let's keep Women of Wisdom going and Women of Wisdom strong. Thanks, you guys.